estate services, Lavazzi and Boob1.co.uk present the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast, episode 310. I'm Adam and Jamie, you've ruined everything. And here's Debbie Melrose.
Evans, come out from behind that board.
Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
I may be stupid, but I'm not daft.
Andy Nunny.
I'll try, but I'll have to get a better position.
And Mary Lang.
This one is for Jeff Waddle. Sing me a song of a lass that is gone. Say, could that lass be I? Mary of soul, she sailed on a day over the sea to sky.
Oh, beautiful. Beautiful.
That's the song that the doctor plays on his recorder.
Yeah.
Yep. I bet that's a question as well.
It's a Scottish song. Yeah.
Do you remember, was it Des O'Connor and who else had a top 10 hit about 20 years ago with that?
Orville.
No, it wasn't. It was Des O'Connor, and it was not Lolly Donegan, it was somebody like him. And they duetted it, and it became a top 10 hit, and they performed on Top of the Pops. No. You know, who would have... No, you can't remember.
Can we get on with the show?
We are on the show. That's something relevant to the show.
I forgot to press the go live button, so we're about 30 seconds into the show, listeners, viewers, whatever you want to call it. Right, so we're going to be looking at the Web of Fear today. Before we look at the Web of Fear, everybody's been a bit busy over the last couple of weeks, hence we haven't been on. I've been busy doing weddings and doing what I'm told by She Who Must Be Obeyed, this, that and the other. For one reason or another, I was spending time with Isabella, which I suppose that's a bit of a crime. For one reason or another, I haven't had time to podcast. Andy's been having operations and recovering from and not remembering he's done a podcast. Mary has been, I don't know what she's been up to. Kirby's been buying superfluous bits of memorabilia. I'm sure he'll be telling her about
plus
that.
Plus, I was at a convention last week.
Yeah,
we'll talk about that in a minute. And Debbie has been getting extremely friendly with Chris Barry, which is and of course Sylvester McCoy. But shall we start with Kirby, because Timegate was sort of earlier, wasn't it? Go on in, Kirby. Get on with it. I'm going to sit back.
Well, it was a good time as usual. Good time gate. The convention started as a combination Doctor Who / Stargate convention, which is where the name came from. And they are regenerating because as Stargate went away, they're now regenerating. So next year they're going to be called Wholanta.
Yes, I saw they were doing that.
Wholanta.
Yeah, Wholanta.
Wholanta. Which it's fine. And it was fun, as usual. Unfortunately, I had a bit of a downer on Saturday because we had to put one of our cats to sleep that morning. So I didn't get to see as much of the convention as I normally would. And I couldn't afford to get autographs or pictures taken with Nick Briggs or Mary's favorite doctor.
Woo!
Are we talking Polly?
Oh, yes, Polly now, is it? Oh, it's
Polly, yes.
I heard them all speak several times and saw them pass the Con GT table, which was in one of the hallways. And cosplay was fantastic as usual. And
what was your highlight? What was the sight of the weekend?
Well, there was nothing as great as being hugged by Katie Manning like last year. I'd say my highlight was seeing this friend of mine, Janine, show up with five different cosplays of really obscure things.
Hmm. Was she the one that was playing the food taster from?
Yes.
Yes, yeah, from the previous one. What was her name? Faria?
Faria.
Yeah.
She is Faria. She was the Watcher from the last Tom Baker story. She was a Draconian. She also brought back out her Azal costume from last year.
Cool.
And there was at least one other. And she told me later that I was one of the few people who recognized Faria.
Oh, wow. But do you think you would Do you think you would have recognized Faria if we hadn't just watched it?
Yes, because we'd done that one before.
Fair enough.
Oh, if I had not watched it, no, I would not have recognized it.
Yeah.
And a lot of people. But it was a fun weekend. I'm looking forward to it next year, except I don't think I can go for both days next year because that's the weekend that Julia graduates from college.
Gosh, she's going to graduate already.
Oh, yeah, it's the convention is moving off of Memorial Day weekend. I forget the exact dates. It's on their Facebook page. It's moving 2 weeks earlier because there was just too much competition for MomoCon.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That's a big anime convention here in Atlanta that just it drew a lot of people away. Although we still had the largest time gate that we've ever had. There were like 1,000 people. And here, let me go to the time gate page. I'll tell you who the guests are for next year.
Oh.
Hang on. Hulanta, formerly Timegate.
Well, now the next con you're going to will be Con Casterbras, right?
Con Casterbras, yes.
Yay!
That's where you and I will meet.
Yes, and I'm assuming that we will be having a live podcast, so you better be prepared for it, Adam.
What date is that, please, Kirby?
Why are you talking from the other room, Andy?
Yeah, why?
Am I coming through badly or something?
No, you sound like you're in the next room.
You're not sat on your microphone, are you?
No. It's,
there you go, that's better. What?
Sorry, I'm just bending the microphone a bit close to my mouth. That's okay. Is that better?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Just don't sneeze.
I'm still trying to find their list of guests for next year.
What date is it?
Hang on.
Woo!
I have to scroll through bunches and bunches of stuff here because for some reason in the Timegate Facebook page there's lots of pictures and reports about Timegate. And so where is the information?
I don't know.
Fair enough.
You guys talk about something else, and when I find the information,
I forgot what we were talking about now. Oh, yeah.
Things that we've been doing.
Yes. Go on then, Debbie.
What? Other than canoodling with Chris Barry?
What else is there?
No, I went to the Brighton Comic Con. I took my 15-year-old nephew, who I was astonished to see when he got off the train, was about a foot and a half taller than me. But yeah, he's now pushing 6'6" and only 15 years old. So I was a bit worried about the hostel bedroom because I didn't know if he'd fit in there. But he'd never been to a con before. So it was an interesting time for him. And I paid for him to have a picture with, obviously, Rimmer. And I also got to speak to very briefly with Sylvester McCoy because I was the first in line for his photos.
Well,
that's good.
Yeah, I timed it so that I could actually sort of be able to speak to him while they were setting up the cameras, and we were in the, you know, I was in the front of the queue, so I was the one that he was interacting with whilst they were doing that. So I got to remind him about when he was with you guys, but he didn't remember specific cons. He remembered geography. So it was like,
oh.
As soon as I told him, it was like, oh yes, oh my goodness, and then I laughed, and he went, dirty laugh. I remember you.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
And he was absolutely lovely. And the picture that I posted on the page, I'll ask Adam very nicely to scan it properly because we were laughing so much when they took that picture. And it was such a good start to the weekend. And unfortunately, I was supposed to see Lala Ward this afternoon, but trains were being very naughty, so I had to get my nephew home rather than just hang on in Brighton for a chance picture. There was so much cosplay going on. It was brilliant, and the talks were brilliant as well. I got in there this morning to Sylvester McCoy and Bonnie Langford reminiscing about how when he first started with Doctor Who, and that was a really good talk. It was only half an hour. They could have gone on for ages. It was so nice. Mm-hmm. And it was just, it was a very pleasant weekend. And, it was Comic Con, so there were lots of comics and stuff. The stuff that I'm in, you know, other animes and things that I'm interested in were there. And my nephew just spent the whole weekend wandering around with his mouth open. It was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, we were thinking of going. My interesting thing I probably would have bought would have been a photo with Bonnie Langford and Sylvester McCoy.
Yes, I didn't realise. She wasn't on the list until after I'd spent all my money, because Bonnie Langford was a later guest.
Of course, if I had gone, it would have cancelled this show, because I wouldn't have been able to get back for this time anyway.
I made it back.
Well, you're you. I would have hung on for my Lala Ward photo.
Yeah,
so I wouldn't have made it back in time. But I nearly. It was so close. Deb nearly said, okay, we've got nothing to do on Sunday. We'll go and do it. But and it was quite cheap, really, because we got the family and friends rail card, and the entry fee wasn't too bad. I would have sneakily got the photo without her knowledge. And would have been really good. Mary, did you do anything?
Yes, I spent several days in Chicago. Playing around with my daughter. Yes. we spent time on the beach, because Chicago is right next to Lake Michigan. And the highlight of my visit was being in a bar with a whole bunch of people that were all supporting the same basketball team that I've been following for a while, the Cleveland Cavaliers, because I've usually watched them all by myself at home because nobody here in Dayton knows anything about them. But, boy, what a lift it is to be, in a bar with a bunch of drunk people cheering for your team.
Oh, how wonderful. The atmosphere must have been brilliant.
It was. Yes. Trouble is, though, a huge storm moved in off the lake right at some key turning point in the game, which knocked out the feed.
Oh. All
the screens in the bar went black. And everybody's like, whoa, no, wait a minute. So just about everybody pulled out their iPhones and smartphones and what have you. And they were all, letting everybody know what was going on. So it went like that for about 10 minutes, and then they got the feedback. So the game, as we could see. Yeah.
Feedback.
Yes, not just yet, no. Andy, have you been up to anything?
Yesterday, there's Stormy and I went to Guildford Castle, and there's a taster of what's called the Guildford Festival coming up. And it was various the things that are going on. So there's the Guildford Shakespeare Company, who I'm a member of, did an extra act for the Comedy of Errors. We had another company who are doing the Merry Wives of Windsor. The Youth Theatre are doing Midsummer Night's Dream. We had a couple of bands playing. There's a Laurel and Hardy tribute act. One of the guys we know actually does a Guildford Ghost tour. And so they do a Laurel and Hardy thing. So that was yesterday. And today we have been to... it's part of the English... Royal Horticultural Society Gardens in wandering around Wisley, which are beautiful gardens. Took Zach there, wandered around, looking at beautiful flowers, beautiful sculpture, and then fed him ice cream. So that's what I've been doing.
Excellent.
Did he like
that ice cream?
Oh, he loves ice cream. I took him out yesterday, gave him an ice cream, and 2 hours later, my God, we had a howitzer.
Had a what?
It was everywhere.
I bet it did.
What was everywhere?
Don't want to know, but it was okay. His nappy. My God, it was.
Oh, please. Oh, yes. No. Right. Thank you. Moving on.
I understand.
So, talking about working in bars and stuff, Alicia works in a bar in Ryde called the Cards Bar. And apparently she spent an evening chin wagging with John Giddings, who is he essentially festival owns the Isle of Wight Festival, and got two free Isle of Wight Festival tickets out of him.
Really?
He met her today. Gave her the festival tickets and said he'll see her at the festival personally.
Oh, my gosh.
Deb is fuming because she's always had to buy her tickets. And she gave her spare ticket to her boyfriend.
We did think of coming this year, but I think Zach's a bit young for it. So, yeah.
Oh, you called him by his real name.
Well, we called him all sorts of things.
I'm afraid the kid's going to grow up thinking his name is Stormageddon.
All right, never mind. Shut up. Right.
Master,
yes.
I've got the information about Hoolanta.
Okay, very
next
quickly.
Year. It's May the 5th, so Friday, May the 5th, 6th, and 7th.
Okay.
There's a day late, then.
What?
It's a day late. From May the 4th.
Short.
Oh, okay. And the guests so far, they'll have more than this, but the guests so far are two people that we have had on the podcast.
That's what she said.
Anyway, moving
Colin
on.
Colin Baker and Louise Jameson.
Excellent.
Colin
that
Baker,
really
Colin
good.
Baker and Louise Jameson.
Right?
Huh?
That's three
you said
people.
Colin Baker, Colin Baker.
Well, he's a bit chunky now. So he's
yes, he is.
Anyway, moving on. Right, we've had a few things happening on the feed. Of course, Ashley's joined, Alan T. Butcher's joined, Jeff Waddle's joined. Mary's communicated to Jeff Waddle that she sang for him when I wasn't broadcasting. Sorry about that, Jeff and Mary. Lindsay Hollis joined, and she says we had robbed a bank in Cowes M&S the other day. Just a name drop. Well, I'm not interested unless you managed to get him to give me some best of all tickets, Lindsay. Probably not. I had to pay for mine. I haven't been to the best of all yet, actually. Right, should we get on with some Doctor Who stuff?
Yeah.
Nah, why bother?
Why?
Yeah, why? Let's think
right, the Web of Fear begins with them essentially recovering from having thrown Salamander out of the TARDIS.
How often did it start on a cliffhanger? Because that's, I mean, the few have, but it's not that many, is it?
Yeah, not many, but it's just a continuation. And Jamie is hanging rather strangely against the wall, sort of.
What? Hence my quote.
He's, eh?
Hence
very
my
good,
quote.
Yeah. He's not quite stretched out enough, but he manages to fall to the console and operate it a little bit, which is rather novel for a companion at this stage. Then he grabs onto, Victoria's skirt.
Yes.
Sadly, does not pull it down. but
I notice they're still wearing their matching outfits.
They are indeed. So the TARDIS, meanwhile, it gets covered in a web, and then we cut to a different scene where Travers, who's now quite old, is arguing to this Professor
Stereotype.
Yeah, Professor Stereotype.
Yes.
Oh, okay. That there's something wrong with this. This thing is dangerous, etc., etc. But of course, he won't hear
That's
anything of it, and it obviously kills him. Because he gets a bit funny, because he's reactivated. God knows why he would, but he's reactivated one of the spheres. Why would he want to do this? Mary's going to tell me.
He's
such an idiot and doing that, honestly.
Because I suppose they wanted to have a six-part story to tell about reactivating one of the spheres and what the consequences of that would be. But, nevertheless, he does. The Yeti's changed a little bit. It's got strange eyes now.
It's a little bit changed, isn't it?
Yeah. And they've got little claw fingers, too.
When we return to the TARDIS, the Doctor is eating a sarnie.
Now, here's a quick question. How long was between the first scene and the second scene? In the first scene, the Doctor's got a plaster on the side of his head.
Yeah.
But in the second time they appear, he's gone. So I do wonder how much time has passed between those two scenes.
Enough time for him to make a sandwich and wrap his head in that thing that Hartnell had on his head. That changes colour when the wound's healed.
But we never actually find out. We just assume time has passed, but you never actually find out.
We don't need to.
He had a mark on his forehead.
Yeah, he's still got a mark on his cheek, though, isn't he?
Yeah, he does.
Mm. Yeah, they basically had enough time for Victoria to make them a sandwich.
And change into 1967 garb as well.
So what's the Victoria sandwich she made?
Oh, ba-dum-ching.
Anyway, Lindsay said, no, David stole the conversation. I don't know what that's referenced. Oh, so I missed out on my ticket, basically. And Jeff Waddle says, more webs in my wallet than those in the underground.
He's a Scotsman, he's what he expects.
Anyway, right. Then we cut to the underground itself, where this sort of journalist bloke is interviewing soldiers. Don't know if that would really happen, to be fair. And then Travers turns up. Because I think there's some things been going on in the underground with Yeti.
Something like that, isn't it?
Lindsay just said, Doctor Who's on Netflix, YouTube, etc.? I've only ever seen the new ones. Yes, they are on not Netflix.
Daily Motion.
Yeah, they're on Daily Motion, Lindsay. A lot of the reconstructions are, and some of the actual stories themselves, they shouldn't be, but they are. Yeah, classic Doctor Who on... you can see some of them on Netflix, can't you, Kirby? No, you're in America, you wouldn't know. Different Netflix.
No, it's only available here on Amazon Prime.
I think this is some on the UK Netflix, maybe, I don't know.
I purchased this one in the Enemy one from, iTunes. Remember when they first came out?
Yeah, we bought those. I think
right,
Lindsay's
we all
talking
did
about,
that.
Lindsay's talking about free content.
Daily Motion.
Yes. Very, very naughty Daily Motion.
And then I transferred my iTunes copies onto DVDs.
Ooh. You did? What a clever fellow you are. Right, so the Doctor... Victoria and Jamie arrive in the underground, and there's a great bit where Jamie just jumps onto the track and the doctors think he's going to get electrocuted.
Yes.
Well, at the station today, all I could think of was that bit, because there was a seagull being very brave, dancing around near the electric, you know.
We get loads of rats in the underground.
The live track. It was like, oh, that reminds me of Jamie.
Ah, there you go. Lindsay says that Netflix only has Eccleston onwards, so there we are. The answer is Daily Motion. Right.
Daily Motion.
Yeah, so talking about the electrified railway lines, when I was little, I remember being on the train at Ryde Station, about to be transported to Ryde Pierhead.
Yeah, you normally ride when you are on the train, yes.
I'm going to ignore that stupid comment. And yes, I heard this dog bark, and then, suddenly this dog yelping, and somebody said, oh, don't look out, don't look out, a dog's just got electrocuted on the track.
And you looked out?
No, I didn't. I couldn't. I was inside the train. I would have had to have got out the train, walked up the platform, and looked at the whatever it was. But I was thinking I was about seven at the time, so I wasn't going to be doing that. So in those days, they were happy to put seven-year-olds on the train and to go onto the ferry and across. But the idea was to get on the ferry, cross to the other side. Dad meets me at the other side in Portsmouth. But nowadays, you wouldn't have seven-year-olds doing that. Anyway, back to Doctor Who. Lindsay said, husband put pennies on the track at Ryde when he was a kid. Ooh, naughty, naughty.
Naughty boy.
I can a friend of mine used to do that, yeah, and squash them flat, wouldn't they? Yeah.
Isn't that a little bit, isn't that a bit dangerous?
No. Well, only if a train's coming the other way.
Oh, that's what she said.
It's fun, Adam.
Shut up. Anyway, so, the Doctor, meanwhile, he spots something coming, he recognises the sound and dives under the platform. Well, I think the Yetis sort of initiate an explosion, shall we say.
Yeah, they coat the explosives, don't they, with the web, and then eventually gets called fungus all the time. So yeah,
it is a web, isn't it? Yeah. So,
if Andy says it's a web, and the story is called Web of Fear, I think we can say it's a web.
But then they sort of segue into fungus. And then they're calling it web and fungus, and then it just becomes fungus by the end.
So this, yeah, there was a, I, yeah.
I like the little effect they have over the end credits for all these episodes with the fungus.
Well, you mean the bubbles or web bubbles?
Yes,
that bubbly stuff. Yeah.
Okay.
Someone's bubble bath really goes mad when it goes through the wall.
Yes, thank you for that.
Yes.
Yeah, so I forgot to mention that there was a point in which the Doctor decides that Jamie and Victoria sneeze.
What are you doing?
Bless you, sir.
That Jamie and Victoria are going to go off one direction down the railway track, and he's going to go off in the other direction. So it turns out that Jamie and Victoria get caught by staff and get taken back to the sort of a HQ, and they're sort of worried about where the Doctor is. They know the explosion.
Staphylococcus?
Pardon?
Staphylococcus?
Oh my god.
As I was saying.
There's always one, isn't there?
They know an explosion's gone off, so they're a little bit worried about the Doctor. They start talking about Yeti and stuff, and of course, Travis's daughter calls Travis himself, and he does initially recognise. And the funny thing is, Jamie doesn't recognise him either.
Well, it's 40 years have passed,
but
isn't it?
Victoria would recognise him because it's her father.
that was really strange because when I would see it, I'd go, well, when Anne is referring to her father, well, Victoria's in the room. That must have been just very strange.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Lindsay goes on to say, my nan found out a few years ago that my dad did the same thing. I think he's talking about pennies on the track in Worthing. I went to Worthing, you know.
I went through Worthing
a few weeks
today.
Dawn and I used to go there every Saturday morning. So get up at 6 o'clock on a Saturday morning to go there for a course. It's the place that time forgot, isn't it, Worthing?
It's what?
It's the place that time forgot.
I don't know. I've only been there once, and I forgot.
Exactly, yeah, there you go.
or when you say Time now, I always think of Sacha Baron Cohen now, because of course he's Time in Alice Through the Looking Glass, and I'll always consider him to be Time now. Lindsay goes on to say, please can you let me know when the next episode you are doing a podcast about, and I'll watch it beforehand. I think it might be a reconstruction. Oh, it is.
It's Fury of the Deep,
isn't it? Yeah.
So it's a reconstruction, Lindsay, but they're still quite good fun, aren't they?
Those you can find also on YouTube.
Yes, but you can find it on Daily Motion.
Easy to find on Daily Motion.
Yeah, just write in the title and.
I don't watch Daily Motion because I don't have fast enough internet. However, guys were working out in front of the house yesterday to put in the fiber optic switches.
Okay, well, thank you, Kirby. Moving on, Alan T. Butcher says, Worthing.
I'm getting gigabit internet in about 2 months.
Good, right. Anyway, Alan T. Butcher says, Worthing. Shut up, Alan.
Let me interrupt just to say something that don't know how extensive this problem might be, but when we talk about Daily Motion and it's going out there publicly, I think that is going to get Daily Motion in trouble. There have been times when
Daily Motion's own fault.
That's Daily Motion's problem, not ours.
Well, I used to follow all the Doctor Who episodes, all of them, even the more recent ones than Troughton and that, and they're all gone now because they took down one guy's entire library that was up there. He had all the Doctor Who from Unearthly Child to Survival, and that was my place to go. But now I don't know how I'm going to be watching those ones in between because this guy's entire library got taken down, and I think it's because people talk about it too much.
Yeah, well, again, it's their fault, but don't worry, we'll get round it, Mary.
Adam, I'm just going to step away for a minute. Isla's crying. I'll be back in a second.
Give her a cuddle from me. That'll stop her. Anyway, Alan T. Butcher said that Worthing is God's waiting room, and then he said, I stood for Parliament in Worthing. And now Andy's going to make some sort of political joke. Go on in, Andy.
I just say he lost. He came third.
Yes. Not a joke. That's what happened. And Jeff Waddle says, the place that Time forgot, Dundee. They've just got the wheel hit there, he says. And Lindsay said, so no, it's not on Daily Motion. I cannot find it there. Hello, hello, style wink. Oh, he's very good. Very good, yeah. There's nothing on Daily Motion, listeners, apparently. It's all been taken down.
Yeah, it's all been taken down.
Yes. Anyway, so there's some sort of journalist chap. I think he's just thrown in there to be a bit of a red herring, because they say that somebody's in with the Yeti and the Great Intelligence, and I think you're supposed to think it's him, because he's a bit of a... not really much of a point to his character, to be fair. Anyway, when Travers hears that the Doctor might be about, he gets quite excited. But the Doctor's got this episode off. I don't know how... he can't be lying down by the platform for all that time, but nevertheless, we don't see him. Meanwhile, Victoria goes on walkabout and so just creeps around the foot and goes, hello, Doctor, is that you?
Yeah, she's good for that in this. Yeah.
And then we meet up with the stereotypical Welsh character that... Ashley Hughes was referring to, that he perhaps could be able to play, because he's a bit overly stereotypically Welsh, don't you think?
There's no sheep.
What? I'd be very surprised if they were going to be able to get sheep down the London Underground, but I suppose they could have done it. What they did get was something that was white and fluffy, though, which was the fungus going through.
Very good, Adam.
The tunnel, which was actually quite a good special effect. Actually, I was quite impressed with that. So episode 3, there was a reconstruction, reconstruction, but I'm glad they put it on there. Really, I think it's quite a good reconstruction, judging by the reconstructions we've actually watched. This was actually put together really, really well, I thought. What do you think then, Kirby? Well, okay, fine.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm providing information for someone on Facebook.
Okay. The important thing about this particular reconstruction is, of course, this is the first time we get to hear Lethbridge Stewart, Lethbridge Stewart. It's a shame that the one episode we haven't got is his first, but nevertheless, it was a time in which we didn't have any of his first few episodes in this particular story, apart from in audio form. So, yes, again, Jenkins...
Sorry, I've got to separate the microphone again as well myself, because I can hear Stormy, so I'm going to go and check on him. Back in a second.
Thank you.
I'll just leave it.
Hey? Why has everyone gone quiet?
I'm not quiet. Providing information for Lindsay. I'm going to provide that information.
I wouldn't bother that, because every time we do that, you disappear, Kirby, so I'd stop that if I were you. We don't have to provide information for Lindsay. I can do that.
It's now posted.
Oh, of course. I was just mentioning to her that, of course, there's no Doctor Who on Dailymotion at all. So there's not really much point, is there? Anyway, moving on.
What do you mean?
Never mind,
Kirby.
That's
the link to it on Dailymotion.
Well, that was a mistake.
Mary, can you tell him off, please?
Yes.
Anyway, episode 3.
You know something?
Good grief.
Google is your friend.
Kirby, sometimes talking about something too much is not the friend.
Tell him off. That's it. Thank you, Mary. Tell him off. He likes being told off. He's snickering to himself. I think he's going the right way for a smack bottom.
You're thinking that I've made that likely to disappear.
What?
Very likely.
Because I don't think so.
Stop arguing. I'm trying to talk about this particular Doctor Who story. Of course, Troughton's had he's back from his week off, and actually there's a tiny bit of text that says, the Yeti approaches the Fortress explosive store, rips away the padlock and enters. That's the only bit of actually descriptive text on this reconstruction. But the reconstruction ends with a Yeti approaching Travers, and going to do him in, apparently. So, an intriguing the way that particular reconstruction was finished, because when we actually see the beginning of the next episode, the photo we saw of Travers sort of cowering is completely different to what we actually see in the episode. Anyway, Travers gets dragged away by the Yeti, and this culminates in Travers being sort of the voice of the great intelligence. And
yes.
No, that's a nice warrior.
He sounds like it, though.
At this point of the story, the Doctor sort of becomes very much sort of... He's working out what to do, and he's trying to sort of lay the little foundation of his plan. Yes?
I have identified, and this is for Mary, too, I've now found at least 3 copies of it on YouTube, Fury from the Deep. So
there you go, then, Lindsay.
It's out there.
If you want to find it, it might not be on... this is Fury from the Deep. You can't speak. Fury from the Deep might be on YouTube as well. And if it's on YouTube, of course, it's never going to get taken off. Right. What did I get on with? So the Brigadier... Sorry, Brigadier. Didn't he call him Brigadier? The Colonel.
Brigadier, yes.
Is being very much his self.
I wrote him down as the Brig. Wrote down Bridge Stewart, but then I just kept calling him the Brig. My note.
I just thought, is this the second time, or this is the first of 2 occasions where you see Nick Courtney playing not the Brig, but looking to try and get the TARDIS escape from? Because in a way, it's sort of precursor to Inferno when he's the Brigade leader.
The Brig. He's just not got promoted yet.
No, but he's not playing the Brig, is he?
No, he was playing Colonel Lethbridge.
Yeah, so he's not the Brig yet, but that's when he's a second.
Well, shall we just say playing Lethbridge Stewart? It doesn't matter whether he's Brigadier or Colonel, he's still playing the same character.
Well, hang on, Brigade Leader, presumably, is Lethbridge Stewart.
Okay, never mind.
Presumably in Inferno, his Brigade Leader is Lethbridge Stewart.
Okay, maybe so. Anyway,
but the point I was making was it's twice then he hears about the TARDIS being a possible escape route and tries to make use of it.
Okay, fair enough.
Yes.
Very good point, sorry. So this episode sees the first use of a team called Havoc, which will become a sort of common thing in the next couple of years in Doctor Who for the next few years after that. And
way up until the episode that was filmed there on the Isle of Wight.
Yes, dear. And of course
I just read that in a book that I bought last weekend.
There's a great scene in which, is it Jenkins, the Welsh character?
Evans.
Yeah, where he legs it in the other direction, and there's a scene where the colonel says, he didn't call it a desertion, did he? I can't remember. It was just quite funny the way he...
He said something about desertion, yeah.
Did anybody notice that watches EastEnders that... The bloke who played the one who died of heart attack quite recently, actually.
Oh.
He was in it very, very briefly. Because he remember that scene, that one of my favourite scenes from Ivar Thandar, where he says, I'll set the dogs on you. He played a character in that as well. And I think he also played a character in Ambassadors of Death. Sort of, I think he often played random unit soldiers. And he's in that. He played the father of the Slaters in EastEnders. Mary will know who I'm talking about.
What was the name of the character in this one?
He didn't have a name. He was just an extra. But his face is quite clearly on the screen when they're looking up the road and the Yeti are approaching.
Good God, someone just posted a picture of Alistair Pearson on Facebook, and he looks bloody awful.
Hey, leave him alone. He's my age.
Yeah, I know.
He does.
Well, I'll tell you what, he looks a lot older than you, Adam.
Yes, because he smokes. I don't smoke.
Given the fact that you and I, in fact, you're younger than me, Adam, therefore he's about my age. My God, he looks. Yeah. He's had a tough paper round, didn't he?
He smokes. He's been a chain smoker all his life.
I'm an ex-smoker, so is Dawn, but yeah.
But he smoked. He's been a chain smoker all the time I've known him. And that will have an effect on the way you look.
Seven years clear on the 30th of August. Yay!
Fair play, mate. I think Dawn's 10 years. I'm about 15 years.
Mm. Well, I'm 50 years clear as of a couple of weeks ago.
Hooray! Yeah, well done, Adam.
Thank you. Anyway, it's a typical sort of unit-style battle goes on between the soldiers and the Yeti, and it's very reminiscent of the battle in Ambassadors of Death, actually.
There's a lot of
Derek on. Sherwin is actually one of the sort of backroom people in this particular story as well, so I wonder if he sort of had any say-so in this particular scene. Yes. Sorry, did I interrupt somebody then? I do apologise. I got a bit carried away then.
No, I was just saying that there was a lot of leg pulling in this fight. Because the Yeti would seem to grab everybody by the leg.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Let's see what else.
You know those the little Yeti figures?
Yes.
Since there's several very good views of them in and I'm going to show some of those to Louisa and see if she can make one.
Are good, right? Yeah, and then she can market them very quietly because the BBC get hold of them.
Gordon Bennett, yeah.
whatever, I've got loads of other stuff coming through here. I've got a kiss off, or two kisses, a big one and a little one off Lindsay. I don't know if that means that she's going or not, but at the moment we've got five viewers. Robin Lansdowne says, just wanted to get the live viewers up to six. No, he needs to, it's not five at the moment. And moving on, hang on. Yeah. Right, so they find a Yeti in the pocket of one of the dead soldiers, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor then realizes he can use that for something or other. So the idea then is to capture a Yeti, so as the doctor can actually control it, or the doctor who or whoever's with it.
Yeah, he can use a prototype BB-8.
Very good. Very good. Like I say, Travers comes along in the guise of great intelligence and says that he wants the doctor's mind, basically. And the doctor must give it up willingly. And if he does so, then everybody's saved. So I think Evans comes up with the idea, just hand him over. doctor's face.
He doesn't see any problem.
The doctor's face when he says it is quite amusing. Meanwhile, they release Travers because they've used him as a sort of messaging board. They bump into a rather bedraggled looking staff in the tunnels. It looks like he's sort of tried hard to escape the clutches of the great intelligence. But meanwhile, he gets taken back in there anyway. The doctor succeeds in capturing a Yeti and succeeds in controlling it. It's a bit like Siri, but it doesn't speak back to you, really, isn't it? it's just funny when Jamie has a go to controlling it, it doesn't quite work properly. Maybe because it can't understand his Scotch accent. I don't know.
Yes.
Yeah.
somebody mentioned earlier about the foam coming through the room. That scene is the cliffhanger of episode 5. In episode 6, the doctor decides he's going to allow himself to go into this sort of pyramid thing. and there was a scene that I've got to go back a bit because there was something funny that made me think it was funny, which I think I've forgotten, never mind. There was also another scene of, oh yeah, in that episode is one where he plays the tune that Mary was singing earlier on while sat on the platform, and but he just plays the same melody over and over again. It's not the whole tune, is it, Mary?
Pretty much.
Repetitive, is it?
No, he just does the same verse over again.
Yeah. Yeah. I've made it nobody's grabbed that thing and shoved it where the sun don't shine. That would have just wound me up so much.
I must get Isabella to learn how to play that tune.
Yes.
Meanwhile, the superfluous character, the
Scottish folk tune.
The journalist bloke. Even though he's a bit superfluous, he's actually quite a good actor. There's a scene in which he's with staff and he's sort of panicking a little bit. There's a poster in the background as well, a Blockbusters with Sidney Poitier and Rod Steiger. Is that a real film?
No. It's a poster. I discussed that last time.
Yeah, all right.
I used to have a picture of it.
Some people might not have been listening last time, Kirby.
Well, I've got to find the picture of it to find what the actual movie was. It may take me a minute.
Okay, well, Jamie does succeed in controlling the Yeti while the Doctor's plan is nearly coming to fruition.
What's the name of the movie as it's...
Blockbusters.
What? Blockbusters? Blockbusters?
Blockbusters, something like that, yeah.
That's not really the name of the movie.
I know.
Yeah, Block-Busters with Sidney Poitier.
Isn't it called?
Okay, it's in the heat of the night.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the Doctor, he sits down in the pyramid, and his plan is to sort of basically get the Great Intelligence into him rather than the other way around, because he's apparently crossed the wire. He's reversed the polarity of the neutron flow and crossed the wires. This is, of course, on the point we find that Staff is the one who has actually been in with... The Great Intelligence all the time, but he dies quite quickly. Jamie scuppers the whole thing, much to the Doctor's annoyance, which is really quite funny.
No, Jamie, you've ruined everything.
Yeah. And
the Doctor got quite angry there.
He wasn't happy with Jamie at that point.
No, he wasn't.
Although Jamie did save everything.
He's going to have to come up against the Great Intelligence.
Yeah, but it took a blooming long time for that to happen, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
And at the end of the story, they essentially just leg it. And now, the last time we watched this story, I like it a bit more than I did last time. I think I remember liking it last time. It's not quite as good as the previous story, but it's quite good. It's probably a little bit long. Maybe four episodes would have done it. But I seem to remember other people within our group, apart from Debbie, weren't that keen on it. Now, before we go on to the people who weren't perhaps that keen on it last time we watched it, we're going to listen to Debbie, who hasn't seen it before. What did you think, Debbie?
I thought it was a little over long. Again, like you said, four episodes would have definitely been enough. I was waiting for it to be really dire, and it wasn't. I actually found that I was interested in the story. I wasn't overly thrilled with the Yeti, I must say. They looked very cute this time round. And their roaring conversation was an interesting thing to put in as well. But I knew what was going to happen and everything. I knew who was responsible. And I thought the way that they portrayed the fungus was quite interesting, with sort of cobwebs one minute and someone's bubble bath overflowing the next minute.
Yeah.
I actually quite liked it. It wasn't as good as definitely not as good as Enemy of the World, and I did think that, as I said, it was overlong. But
that's what she said.
I've spent almost all weekend, when I'm not messing around at Comic Con, thinking about it, and it's one of those makes you think episodes, which was really, that's what I quite
like. I'd like to see your notes, a picture of your notes for this one.
We got to see that once. She took a picture, and in the corner,
I know.
They were amazing.
Yeah,
I want to see her notes for this one.
Okay,
sure. Wait until after the quiz.
Yes, maybe after the show might be a good idea.
After the show, I'll share them if you like. But there's not so many as sometimes there have been for six-parters, because there was a lot of running up and down tunnels. So I didn't write down running up tunnel again or anything like that. I just sort of, my notes sort of jump from one scene to the other where you know that someone's been running up a tunnel in between that bit.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Doctor, all the tunnels look alike.
Yeah. I like that. Funny how we always...
We all the same tunnel.
Yes.
Well, London Underground were convinced they were their own tunnels, didn't they? Because actually... accused the BBC of going in and filming, didn't they?
Yeah, yes, they did.
Yeah, except if you look at those tracks and the points, you could not take a train down that thing.
Okay.
I do like the way the Doctor says at some point that, isn't it funny how we always end up landing on your Earth?
Yes.
Brilliant. Yeah. That was going to be my other quote, but I really loved Colonel Lethbridge-Stewart in this, but the way he just said, Evans, get out from behind that, you know, that board was just one of my...
Yeah, his legs are sticking out from underneath it, yeah.
It was just, I think it was wonderful because I'd not seen this, obviously, and the Brig is one of my all-time favourites, and it was brilliant just to see him being his character completely already, and it was fantastic to see that.
Well, but a lot of it's not my favourite. Because they brought him back.
No, he was brilliant, and but it was almost reminiscent of the War Machines. Is it the War Machines? Yes, the War Machines with the fight scene did feel a bit like that. We're going
War
up
Machine.
And out.
Oh, War Machines, yeah, sorry. Yeah. I was thinking of War Games. No, you can't see that one.
War Machines, where they go up the alley with the boxes. And
it
did feel a bit like that at that point. Yeah. But I liked it. It's not up there, but it kept going.
Excellent. Thank you, Debbie. A few things have come through. Jeff Wardle says, tell Mary Blitz Lang, Mr. Fibberley on Daily Motion, and delete this post quick. Oops. I don't know if that's another kiss from Lindsay, or just I didn't notice Jeff Waddle's previous post. I missed that one earlier. Sorry about that. Jeff Waddle says, who the hell can't understand the Scottish accent? Hoots mon Sassanach.
Sassanach.
Yes.
Sassanach.
And T. Butcher said, what? Ashley Hughes said, 20 megabyte band. Jeff Waddle says, open your lugs. And then he says, it's a chair tribute feed. And I don't know what he means by that. Andy Nunny says, what are you saying that for? You're on the show, Andy. That's pretty weird. Anyway, right.
Yeah.
I've just knocked the microphone. I do apologise, listen.
You're not going to read it out then?
While I turn the lights on in this room.
So you're not going to read it then, Adam?
Oh, all right. Brew made in Scotland from Girders.
No, he didn't say Girders. Girders. It's iron brew Girders. Made in Scotland from Girders. Does.
Yeah, really relevant to the subject matter of the show. Right, I'm going to go and turn the lights on because I've got this strange throbbing thing above my head on what I can see from this video, and it looks really weird. So it looks like I'm just about to be beamed up. So the next person we're going to have is Mr. Andy Nunny. What did you think, Andy?
I thoroughly enjoyed it. Now, I've been saying that all these have been too long. We're six-parters, should be four-parters. And actually, I disagree with people who are saying this was too long, because I think it actually did work well. There was a lot going on there. There was a lot of story, and it wasn't just running up and down corridors. Because you had different aspects going on, you had the Doctor trying to find who the Great Intelligence was, you had staff disappearing off doing his own thing, you had Evans doing bits and pieces, you had the Colonel then turning up. So you had a lot of different aspects of this story coming on. But what I really appreciate with it, I think this really works well as a black and white story. I think had this been filmed in colour, it would have actually lost a lot. It would have made it too bright. I think the fact that he's down in the tunnels, it's dark, really helped make the story what it was. Because I think this is an absolute classic story. I mean, everybody remembers it because, of course, it's the first appearance of Lethbridge-Stewart as himself, you know, obviously going on to be the Brigadier. And in a way, it starts the unit story. And everyone said the invasion really is probably the first unit story in his own right. But you can hear at the end of it, the Colonel then saying what we should have is something like a unit task force. So that's why I think it worked really well. But I think it did work really well because, what are you doing?
Me? I'm just just switching lights on and...
Oh, right, okay. So am I that boring? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
No, I'm just getting myself an ice cold can of Stella.
Right, but so, no, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think it really does work well, and there's a lot to the story, and I think this is one of the true classics.
Sorry, I'll just fidget.
We've all gone quiet. Why?
It's very sticky in here. I'm not sticky, it was hot.
Well, I've got a bottle of water. I've got a bottle of water, rather than, you know, no alcohol for me for a change. Just
good.
Water.
But I found myself stuck to this sort of leather, fake leather chair, or faux leather, I should say. and I found that it's quite
painful. Every time you move it, it sounds like you're farting. Well,
I haven't got any trousers on, so I stick to the chair when it's hot.
You still have a bright light on
you. You've got trousers on? Don't stand up again.
Well, I did earlier, because my bum might have appeared. I'm not naked bum, by the way, Debbie. When I drew the curtains.
Well, I'm in my dressing gown, if people really want to know.
Actually, I think it did appear because Ashley Hughes has posted in your pants again, Adam. And yeah, Ian Kirk said my smartphone says attachment unavailable instead of showing the stream. So what's going on there? And Jeff Waddle says, is that the body of Morbius under the sheet with poppies on it? Take it off. No, it's another load of coats. They tend to like to use this particular facility, which is actually an exercise bike, for hanging coats rather than using it as an exercise bike.
Does anyone actually use it as an exercise bike?
A big button?
Does anybody use it as an exercise bike?
Debbie uses it from time to time.
I think all exercise equipment, it's pretty universal, end up as coat hangers, yeah.
No, not in this house.
Yeah, and moving on. So have you finished then, Andy?
Yeah, I'm done, thank you.
I'll go with then, Kirby.
I love it. I loved it the first time I saw it several years ago.
I don't remember you liking it the first time around.
Yes.
Ooh,
why would I not love it?
Yeah. I don't know.
There's not much more for me to say.
That's got to be worth one of these. And then, what is definitely worth one of these, because it's time for Mary.
Yeah.
Oh. Actually, I've completely revised my opinion of this story. I was one of the ones who really disliked it the first time and said the same thing that Deb said. And this is her first time that it's like, oh, it's running up and down these corridors. There's just too much of it. And I hated it for that reason. But then I think I was watching it probably like she was, one episode right after another. Whereas this time I disciplined myself, watched only one episode.
Ooh.
And I found,
sorry.
And nobody was around to watch. So, anyway, and I found that it really added to the story. And each episode, except maybe for five, was very engaging because they were slowly building the tension, like an Agatha Christie story of like, okay, there's just this many people and somebody is, you know, like the rat, or somebody is the, you know, the hidden problem, and who's it going to be? So it's almost like every episode brought somebody else to the fore as to being the one who might be the problem. And that whole episode, episode two with the doctor gone, added to that, I thought, because with him gone, it's like there was no core to the story. Everybody was kind of accusing everybody else. So I liked that. I also enjoyed Ann Travers's relentless cheerfulness through all this. I loved when she was challenged, you know, like, what? You know, hey, honey, why did you become a scientist? You know, and her thing is,
yes.
Well...
Because I wanted to.
Yeah, that's a really good scene, that. I forgot to mention that. Really good scene.
So I really liked Ann Travers's attitude throughout the whole story. And I got a kick out of the music that they used during the Big Yeti attack. It's like, this must be their go-to monster music. Every time the monsters are, you know, like displaying themselves or getting in a fight, we go back to the, you know, that Cyberman music. What else did I want to say? Oh,
it's called Space Adventure Part 3.
Okay, Space Adventure. Yeah, they must like that song.
Yes.
Yeah, I found episode 5 is probably the only one that dragged because we were just, you know, here the doctor was endlessly fiddling with that machine, and it was 20 minutes of the doctor fiddling with that machine, so and nothing else much going on, so I didn't care for that episode.
And there's no way he could have done all that in 20 minutes.
Oh, I know. Yeah, that's kind of silly. And you guys keep talking about the web and the fungus. Maybe they're the same thing. I don't think so, because what the Yeti were shooting out of their guns was definitely web stuff.
Yeah.
But the fungus, to me, appeared to be something else entirely. It was what was all above ground, and it was what filling up the tunnels. Mm. But it wasn't coming out of the Yeti guns like the web stuff was. So there was a distinct difference between the two. But yeah, watching it the way I did this time, I enjoyed it lots better good. Than I did the first time through.
See, that says shows listeners, don't give up on Doctor Who just if you didn't like it first time round. And we'll probably find that when we look at some of the first series of Peter Capaldi. That's a good name for someone. When that comes along. Now, we've had another thing come up on the feed.
Wait, can I say one more thing?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Sure.
Something that I had that I found very amusing was, I wonder who pitched this story, what that conversation had to have been like. Because the last time we saw the Yeti, they were like the abominable snowmen, you know, up in the Himalayas, and, you know, they were myth, and they, you know, and they were up there. Then who was the person who sat there and said, yeah, really, you know, Yeti, let's put them in the London Underground. Let's put guns in their hands so that they shoot all this. No, wait. No, don't go away. Listen, this is, I can make this work.
don't go away. No.
The craziest collection of ideas here.
No, brilliant. Like I say, on the feed we have, Jeff Wardle saying this feed is jumping all over the place, as are the comments. It's going from Norman Collier to Benny Hill chase scene. Now, I will say I've switched over to 4G for the live feed now because obviously it's struggling doing my Skype input and this. So hopefully people who are watching, all seven of you, will have a more smoother.
Well, you seem to be up. I'm not sure.
I'll watch it when it's over.
Well, at the moment, Adam, you're stationary. You're frozen.
Well, it's freezing. I should be running quite nicely.
Well, actually, you've gone completely blank now, just looking at it, and you've gone blank on for me. There's a black square.
I'll restart it then. Right, so anybody that can still see me, I do apologise, but we're going to restart the feed.
No!
Ending live video.
No!
And we're going to go...
Yeah, Ian Kirk said attachment unavailable was
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there.
Well, yeah, but that's just on his phone.
Yeah, well, I don't know why that would be either. I've watched live stuff on the phone before.
I'll download the video when it's done. I have ways of doing these things.
Your videos are a conversation starter. It'll be posted to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast soon. And you can keep the conversation going in the comments there. Your live video. Yes. Save. No, I don't want to save it to the camera roll. Thank you. Upload high quality. I suppose we could do that. All right, continue.
You must be speaking Mac.
I don't know, but it's not allowing me to get out of the next menu, I should say.
So thank you, dear.
We should move on to some feedback. What do you think, Debbie? This is Paul.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcasters. This is Paul Gobert with my review for The Web of Fear. Oh. This is the first time I've watched it, and it's straight up there as one of my favourite stories. Oh, I love the attachment to the previous great intelligence story, The Abominable Snowman. Not just another monster story, but a proper sequel with Professor Travers back and a bit of revenge in there too. Plus the wonderful first appearance of Nicholas Courtney as the Brigadier. Yay. No wonder they got him back. Just fantastic. He doesn't change.
No.
Every time I watch Patrick Troughton's story, I feel like I appreciate him more. I feel like I mention this every review, but he really is fantastic, and I'm wondering if he's going to end up being my favourite Doctor. Anyway, that's enough waffle from me. Catch you next time for another flippin' reconstruction. I feel like I've been spoiled with this run of mostly complete episodes. Thanks a lot. See you later.
Thank you very much, Paul.
Yeah, thanks, Paul.
Yeah, well, Mary liked it. Oh, I've gotten something from Alan T. Butcher, which will require me, while I sort out the technical difficulties of live video stream podcasting, would allow me to send it to Debbie Melrose, who will then very, very kind...
You know he's only going to try and trip me up with his tongue-twisting linguistics.
That's what she said. Here we go. Good luck, Debbie. Thank you, going to try and fix this video feed.
Oh, my days. what a tangled web of fear we weave when first we practice to change the contracts of a well-organized workforce. Dear 20 Megabyters, the web of fear is, of course, a closely studied analogy for the labour relations debacle caused by Boris Johnson on the London Underground as mayor. Boris himself, self-styled great intelligence and actual exogenous, danger holds itself aloof from the interaction and is singularly unloquacious while sending in the end mortality butcher endogenous Leavers of the state. I've had a glass of wine. This isn't good.
By the way, we are back live. Just like to interrupt that. We are back
running size
live.
Too.
Apologies for the listeners who are listening to the first
live, part. But not
hope they're joining us. Oh, we got two. We've got two. Ashley Hughes is on. Oh, we've got three. We've got three viewers. Anyway, carry on, Debbie.
The Yeti represented the transport for London to changing conditions on the underground network, causing dangers and closures within the system. The proto-unit army group, which forms under the Bob Crow figure Colonel Lethbridge-Stewart, fights hard like the Maritime and Transport Union to keep the network open and safe, but the situation gets worse
than
that.
Debbie?
What?
I'll just let you put you under even more pressure. Alan T. Butcher is actually now listening to his feedback read by you. So carry on.
I guess he
typically does.
He's already. He probably hasn't heard live then how much he tripped me up now, but he'll hear. Geordie, representing to untrustworthy press, meets with great and justified suspicion. Eventually, the great intelligence enters the fray directly, but is promptly defeated. But like Boris, while satisfactorily vanquished as per the contemporary necessity, unfortunately escapes to cause mayhem in the wider universe. We also learn mechanical Yeti can regenerate. Web is fungusy.
Web is fungusy, that's not quite right.
And the great intelligence still isn't. Great story, but they should have laid in a few more references to foreshadow the sequel story, The Name of the Doctor, that came along just a few years later. Those are my thoughts. Alan T. Butcher.
Yes, thank you very much, Alan T. Butcher, for your thoughts. Yes, Kirby.
While I was looking up other things, did anyone happen to mention one of... Did anyone happen to mention that one of the Yeti is John Levine?
No,
we didn't mention that. We probably mentioned it last time, so yeah, it's worth mentioning it again. But Jeff Waddle says the feed has started from the beginning. So is this a Stephen Moffat feed?
He's watching the other one.
No, he can't be, because he's commented on this one. He's being silly. Okay. I'm on it, onto him, you know. I love the way that sonic screwdriver looks really big when I poke it at the... carry on. Have you finished?
Yeah.
I was finished.
Okay, got some more feedback. Which will require me to do this.
Hello, gentlemen. The podcast is Ian Kirk.
Sorry, badly timed.
The Web of Fear. As the story begins, the Doctor has a firm grip on Victoria. The robot Yeti are attacking London Underground. The army are moving in. Like a Barcelona football match, it is going to get messy.
Oh dear.
The Yeti have web guns. The map of the London Underground looks a bit like a web. This story sees the return of Professor Travers and the Yeti, and the introduction of Lethbridge Stewart. The Doctor gets a pet Yeti. The army is suspicious of Jamie because he is from the wrong side of the tracks. There is a Cadfield's chocolate machine in this story. If there was a stack of chocolate bars that came to a point, would that be a pyramid of Mars? The Professor's daughter is played by an actress called Tina Packer. The professor is surprised to learn that the time machine he heard about 40 years ago in Tibet really exists. If I could... Sorry. I went a bit Cher then. The subtitles describe Captain Knight's underground HQ as a fortress. This could be the Siege of Fort Knight. Unless it is a game of Mornington Crescent. Bye for now.
I guess he's had a couple of weeks to prepare that one.
I could only hear part of it, and he didn't post a transcript of it this week.
Oh, dear. Does that mean you're going to have to listen to the podcast for a change, Kirby?
I always listen.
Yeah.
Okay. What I'm going to do is go back...
And like I said, I'm going to download your two video feeds as well.
Are you?
Yes.
Okay. What we're going to do is play Ian Kirk's original...
Hello, Twenty Megabyte Podcast. This is Ian Kirk. On November 5th, we set off fireworks. You might be able to hear some early ones in the background tonight. We used to be celebrating the downfall of a man who tried to blow up Parliament, but I suspect these days some of us are celebrating his initiative. The Web of Fear by Haseman and Lincoln. Not that Lincoln. He went right off actors. London Underground trains used to spend their retirement on the Isle of Wight. I don't know if they still do.
They do.
It is short skirts all round again, including Jeremy. At the beginning, when the TARDIS was out of control, the other two seemed to be both grabbing hold of Victoria.
Yes.
Mr. Silverman in episode 1 was a caricature. They will not try that these days. Oy vey. Last time we had an oily TV presenter, Kirby said he sounded like an early David Frost, and he might be right.
Hello, good evening, and welcome. Will 1970 see Edward Heath at last leading the Conservative Party to a well-earned victory in the Cowes Regatta?
The set with the Underground Railway Station is very good, except the track. If you know about railway points, that is, railroad switches, you can see a train would not get through there.
I mentioned that.
The same set is used for several stations. They used the line, "These tunnels all look the same," perhaps for the first time. Part of the plot was 10 little jelly babies, people getting killed off over time. Several characters were behaving strangely, including Lethbridge Stewart. We had to guess who was in league with the Great Intelligence. I think they cheated there, using someone we thought was gone. I enjoyed the story up to the beginning of episode 5, when it started dragging a lot. People were walking down tunnels and back again just to keep the story going. Since the Yeti was supposed to be robots, that explained why they would not be too convincing. The Great Intelligence, wanting to absorb a Time Lord, reminded me of House in The Doctor's Wife. As in that, he was outsmarted by the Doctor in the end. There was an opera house at Covent Garden. The cast were very good, except Jack Watling playing Professor Travers was obviously young for the role. Unavoidable, as he had supposed to have aged since the previous story. How do you get to Covent Garden? You have to practice. Bye for now.
I'm not going to say thank you to Ian for that because he did send it 3 years ago. In fact, 28th of October 2013.
Wow.
Blimey indeed.
So we must have done the two stories shortly after they were released.
Oh, we did. We did. We did them immediately after they were released.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Well, not immediately because we had to have time to watch them.
Oh, I mean,
we did them pretty close after they came out. Yeah.
I was making a little joke, sir.
It was rubbish, as per usual. We did have some other feedback for the same episode from Matthew Kressel, Andy and Dawn, and Patrick Bishop. Do you want to hear that? No? Okay, we'll move on.
Sure.
Oh, you changed your mind. The only one that said sure, you've been voted out.
No, sure.
No, go on then.
It was share or sure with that?
Can't do Matthew because it's not allowing me. Oh, God, I've lost the page now. Something to do with downloading the file. I can't be asked to do that. It's not going to stream it. Who else we got? Andy and Dawn. Let's see what happens here. Oh, it seems to be available.
Well, good evening, 20 megabyters. It's Andy and Linda here.
Oh,
it's 8:49 p.m. It's Friday night. The lovely Dawn is at the gym again, pounding iron, hitting treadmills, doing things like that. I've done my bit, actually not very much today, apart from me 10-mile cycling to and from work and my gym session, but anyway, sitting here with a glass of wine, and Robert did once comment that every time I do feedback about a glass of wine. Tonight I've got a South African Barefoot wine. It's a Sauvignon Blanc. It's quite a lemony, citrusy one, apart from the fact it sticks to the coaster on the computer table. And
I do like Barefoot. It's nice.
It's very light flavour, very delicate.
I like being Barefoot.
It's not bad. It's one of the Sainsbury's. I think it's 2 for £13, the same from the little shop around the corner. But very drink with an early evening drink. Anyway, I've also got cooking downstairs a rather good parsley chicken with apricot, which
Andy,
I'll be serving up to lovely Dawn with some basmati lemon rice. I do enjoy Indian cooking, so yes, one day when I get across there, and Robert, you and the lovely Jocelyn will be want to come around for a meal. You can do if you want to try Indian cooking. Reese, I'll teach you what Indian cuisine is all about. But anyway, tonight's topic of conversation. Hopefully, Adam, you'll get this and we'll play the right one. I mean, I did hear the Spirit from Space one that somehow didn't
get
through to
you,
but
the right
got
one?
Played anyway. We're done
with it. Grief. Are we actually
going
to get talking about the
now
episode?
Web of Fear? Hey! Now, I'm not going to do a review of this, partly because everyone's done a review of it, and also I haven't actually watched it yet. Yeah, just had the time to. I was painting all last weekend, but having read the novel and listened to the audio soundtracks they did a few years ago with the commentary, what I'm interested in is really the way that Web of Fear is the hallmark of the Pertwee. It really shows how the Pertwee era is going to move. If you think about it, what you've got is it's based on the siege, effectively, down the London Underground. Obviously, something I do know fairly well, working, having worked in London for, 15 years now, crikey. It's based on a siege. It's a doctor who's trapped, like Pertwee. And what you've got, of course, is at the beginning of the unit. I'm doing hand gestures again, aren't I? At the beginning of the unit era. Now we think about it. How many people did unit actually have? There were six of them, wasn't there? Which I think is about the current strength of the British Army anyway. But they never seemed to have a lot of people. And you think who they had down there. Again, they only had a few of them. They had the colonel, as he was then. They had Captain Knight. They had the sergeant. They had the corporal. And the Private Evans. And really, that's about it, wasn't it? And you think, when you go into units, you've got Yates, you've got the Brig, you've got Benton. You've got a few other characters like Morgan, who flits in and out, but
Morgan?
It's really, you know, it's really a ragtag bobtail army, isn't it? There's only very, very few of them around. So again, I think you saw this going through into the Pertwee era. And again, it's what you see is a doctor having to outthink the opposition, but with very little recourse to technology, because the TARDIS doesn't work, so we can't really use that. He's got to put his hands through whatever he can find around him, so he's using radio sets, he's using transistors. I mean, you know, transistors, my God, I mean, like, you remember transistor radio, you remember valve radios and things like that. He's got to turn his hand to whatever he can pick up, and they do go out at one point into the streets and raid a shop. But it's a bit like David Triffey to do something similar to that as well. But again, it's what you're showing is he's very limited. He can't just pull out the sonic screwdriver and just flick a switch and boomf, problem solved. So again, I think what you're seeing is the start of the era where the Doctor is very much a man of action, but a man who's limited as to what he can do, because he can't just use the magic box that is a TARDIS. And I think, I do wonder, when they wrote this script, did they know Troughton was going to go? Possibly not. This is what probably filmed, well, it's probably scripted in 67, obviously filmed a bit later. And then, of course, it led on to the invasion, where you really did see the start of Unit, the Brig being promoted. Mm-hmm. Up to Brig, yes, he was a Brig. Of course he would be, yes. And then, moving forward into the seventh series of Doctor Who in the colour era, I guess they knew that was coming as well. But a whole new way of looking at the Doctor. Perhaps this was a trial run to see how it would work. And if so, it was very, very successful. Because what you got was the claustrophobia of being in the tube. And anyone, I mean, I guess Adam, you know, you're not from London, but you obviously have travelled to London a few times. For my colonial and across the pond friends, not sure what experience you'd have had of travelling in something like that. Now, travelling in a tube is really quite an experience. Now, I'm a big bloke. So I can generally make a bit of space myself. The lovely Dawn, as Robert would know, is knee-high to a grasshopper. And, yeah, she quite often finds her face being shoved in people's armpits, poor lass. But it's what it is. It's very tight. It's very close. You haven't got the space to move around in, which in itself brings a feeling of disquiet, of discomfort. And so you start to build an atmosphere of tension already, because everything's so tight and compressed. What you haven't got is a great wide open scenario of outer space that other I'm just gesticulating wide spaces, which pretty useless really. Reece, you'll have to teach me how to do this vocally. But I think the third thing I want to talk about, again, is how this was a precursor to the way the Third Doctor's era was going to go, is how the Doctor does not want to be the big I am, although, I mean, Pertwee himself, I mean, if anyone ever saw him in convention, he certainly knew how to, he was flamboyant in the way he dressed us, but he didn't want the credit. He wanted to get the job going, get the job done and get out again. I know Pat Troughton was, from what I've heard, a very shy man personally, and I think the way he played the Doctor was as well. But again, I think it's where you see the Doctor seeing there's something needs to be sorted. You go in, you get it sorted, Then you get out of it again. You know, you go off and do something else as well. So that's why I think when this was scripted up, it's always, this series is going to move forward. It's perhaps getting a bit stale. I know there's a lot of talk that the series could have come to a grinding halt after Series 6 when Pat Troughton regenerated because didn't have know who was going to go on till. That could be a good cut-off point. I think the thinking behind the scenes was we need to revitalise, re-energise this series, take it in a new direction. So here we have a pilot, in a way, to see what happens if we do it in a very, very enclosed environment with very little room for the story to move around. Therefore, it's got to be a very tightly scripted story, which is what we get here. So I think when you look at forward and you move forward into Spearhead from Space, again, that's very tightly scripted. You look at Inferno. Inferno is all around one base. You look at Ambassador Death. Again, it's around the capsule and the base itself. Everything's very, very tightly enclosed. Mind of Evil, again. So I think what you see in The Web of Fear is a good look at how the series was going to be taken forward, and it's the script editors, the writers, have the producers, have the confidence to say, this is what we see Doctor Who becoming in its new incarnation. We've probably got inkling that Pat Troughton was going to go on much longer, therefore there's going to be something new coming out of it. We don't know who it's going to be. In fact, we didn't even know it's going to happen because we could have been cancelled. But this direction we want to take it forward in. The invasion took it one step forward, and that meant, come January 1970, when a little four-year-old, tiny little Andy Lee was sitting goggle-eyed in front of the box, Doctor Who became. There you go. Robert, I hope you're better now and you finished chucking up. Or should you be chucking down if you're down under? Rhys, I've seen so far your story went very well, so I'm glad to hear that. And best wishes to one and all, and be seeing you.
Make it stop.
Who the hell let that bloke go on like that?
Yes.
Master. 15 minutes ago in Andy's recording, he mentioned the sonic screwdriver. Did you know the sonic screwdriver is going to appear
in the next story? Yes.
In the next story.
Yes. I've got some feedback, sort of, from the feed.
Is it Jeff going Waddle to put says, us to sleep?
No, I've done that one. Sorry. Jeff Waddle said blankety blank. Terry Miles said, wake up, Adam. I had a quick snooze. Alan T. Butcher said, Andy used to be a much more verbose, didn't he? And then he said, interesting theory, Andy. Probably not.
Yeah, I remember whenever you put Andy's feedback on, that's when I would go start doing some, you know.
I'm usually more verbose too, except I was posting something when you asked me this week about my opinions of the story, therefore I was very terse.
All right, anybody want to hear Patrick Bishop's original feedback?
Yes,
sure.
You sure, even after that?
Yes.
Well, how many hours?
Hello,
does it go?
Everyone at the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast. This is Patrick from North Hollywood, California.
Yay.
With my feedback for The Web of Fear, one of the two recently discovered episodes that I downloaded from iTunes and watched. Fantastic episode. I really liked it. It kept me riveted. All six episodes kept my full attention. Even the reconstructed telesnap version, I guess that's what it's called, episode 3. I thought that was pretty well done. It's the first time I had ever seen it. I'd never seen the previous reconstructed version of Web of Fear. But great story. I really don't have much to say other than I really enjoyed everything about it. It kept me on my toes. It kept me guessing to the end who was the traitor. Well, the one who was under the control of the intelligence. I didn't know to the very end. I kept thinking it was a reporter. Then sometimes I would think it was the brigadier or the colonel in this case. You know, other times I would think it was the, you know, who it actually turned out to be. So very good, very good story, a good yarn. I love the Yeti. My first experience seeing them, and yeah, they're really creepy little Yeti, or creepy big Yeti, I should say. So yeah, short feedback. I love the story. I didn't get a chance to send my feedback in for last week. I didn't have time, but suffice to say that I love that story also. Anyway, I have to run. One quick thing. The Day of the Doctor special. They're doing it in 3D, and they're showing it in theaters,
really?
As I'm sure all of you know. Well, the tickets went on sale last Friday, and I was 5 minutes away. I forgot about it. I waited 5 minutes too long before I can get the tickets. They were selling they're actually showing it in a theater really close to my house in 3D, and I missed it. So that would have been really great. Apparently, they sold out like within minutes all across the country, all across the U.S. at least. And there's no encore. There's only one showing at 7:30 on that particular Monday, at least in Los Angeles. So I missed out. So if any of you guys out there got tickets, let us know. I'd like to know what it's like after the fact when we do the feedback for that particular episode. Anyway, enough from me. You guys have a great week.
Thank you,
Pasta.
Yeah. Ah, blessedly short.
Pasta.
Yeah.
You said Patrick. You said Ian. It was Patrick.
I said, yes. Thank you. I didn't get your son to say Patrick because I got interrupted. Didn't say Ian. Yes.
I now have a little more to say about the story. I was reminded by Patrick's feedback there. This was the second time that I watched it. First time, obviously, 3 years ago. And this time, knowing that Staff was the person behind the great intelligence there, or being controlled by the great intelligence, I could see it. I could see signs of it. There were hints in his behaviors.
Okay.
Yeah, but during for more than halfway through the story did he become.
No, he was from the beginning.
No.
Yes.
No, I think when he got sent off that trolley, and then he disappeared for a very long time, I think that's when he became.
No, because he was planting the little Yetis in people's pockets before they went on the trolley.
That was the suggestion, yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you,
okay.
Kirby. Now, it's not very often that this particular feature of the podcast becomes a bit of a saving grace, but it is now time for this week's edition of You Won't Get This One. Okay, Debbie,
yeah.
Who do you think will be ahead after the questions?
Me.
Wow.
Ooh.
Sorry, that was a lager, but Kirby, who do you think will be ahead after the questions?
See, it's now there's no point, because if she's ahead and she wins, there's no point in saying her.
Just get to move on.
Because no matter what you do, you cannot win.
Say yourself.
Okay, I'll say myself.
See, that tactic worked, didn't it, Debbie? Mary, who do you think will be ahead?
You.
Okay. Andy, who do you think will be ahead?
Kirby.
And I have put down Kirby. So, let's get underway, if I can find my questions. Here we go. Right. Who does Anne Travers see before...
Whose question?
For Debbie, sorry. Okay. Who does Anne Travers see before her father?
I know.
Julius Silverstein.
My thing says M.R. Silverstein, but I'll give you that one anyway. Missed out on your joker there, though. Kirby!
Master?
Where was Anne supposed to be meeting her father?
At the airport.
Again, missed out on your joker.
Oh, Mary. Darn joker. Mary, I'll remember next time.
Mary, what is the doctor eating when Victoria shows off her outfit?
I know.
A sandwich.
Should have played your joker. Andy.
Okay.
This is where it might fall apart.
Oh, thank you.
What is the name of the dead soldier?
I think I know. Is he
Weems.
There?
Weems. Pardon? Weems.
No, it's Colonel Pemberton.
Hey, come on.
Hey.
Kirby said that he might know that
one. I'll give him a point for that one. Sorry.
I did know that one.
All right, I'll give you a point. Now shut your face. I'll give myself a point. Yes, it was Colonel Pemberton. Sorry, Kirby. Who do you think it was?
Pemberton.
Debbie.
You're mine.
Debbie.
Has Mary had a question?
Yes, I had a
question. Okay, yeah, carry on then.
Do you mind? I'll start deducting points in a minute. Right. Who does Harold Chorley work for?
Whose question is this?
Debbie, I said Debbie, please listen.
London Television. Damn it, should have played my joker.
Kirby.
Master.
What was the name of the jumpy soldier?
The jumpy soldier.
The one was a bit
Weems?
Should have played Joper. Joper? Joker.
I wasn't sure.
Okay. Mary?
If I'm not sure, I'm not going to play a Joker.
Yeah, never mind that. Mary?
Yes?
What station does the Doctor go to after separating from Jamie and Victoria?
I think I know.
I know.
After separating?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Good. Andy said I know first.
Cannon Street.
Beg your pardon?
Cannon Street. No, Charing Cross,
too
bollocks.
It's Charing Cross.
Yeah, no, Charing Cross.
Bollocks,
yeah. Yeah, bollocks, yeah.
Okay, that's Andy, your question.
Okay.
What soldier is assigned to watch Jamie and Victoria?
No, no idea.
I think I might know.
Go on in, Kirby.
What's the names of the various soldiers? Blake.
Yay.
Right.
There are a lot of characters, but I got them straight this time.
I think if this had been filmed in colour, they'd all be wearing red shirts, wouldn't they?
Yeah. Yes.
Quite possible.
Yeah, all of them except for the Brigadier killed it.
Then score update. In last place with no points, it's Andy.
Hey, yep.
In fourth place with 2 points, it's Mary. In third place, joint second place with 4 points each, it's Debbie and me. And in the lead with 6 points, it's Kirby. This question goes to Debbie.
Yep.
Where was the staff sergeant told to put Jamie and Victoria?
Joker common room.
Well, that seems to have changed the scores. Kirby.
Master.
What was on the wall of the common room?
Oh, no.
Joker.
Yep.
A dartboard.
That seems to have changed the scores.
Write that down.
Mary.
Write that down.
Yes.
Who does HQ try to call?
Ghostbusters.
I'll use my Joker, Hogan.
Whoa!
Yeah. Woo.
Andy.
Okay.
How many years have passed since Travers last met Jamie and Victoria?
I know.
Joker, over 40 years.
Yay!
Excellent.
We've all played our Joker.
They've all gone. Okay.
That's rare.
Yeah, that.
Moving back around to Debbie.
Yep.
How does Anne threaten Chorley?
Hmm. Oh, good question.
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Probably won't get this one. This is how we got the title of the quiz. You won't get this one.
Probably. No, I'm looking ahead, but I can't seem to see anything. With a cup of tea?
Nope, anybody?
She has very long claws.
Oh, God, yes.
Oh, yes!
Yes, bloody hell. Typical woman.
Kirby.
Master.
What in line with Cannon Street Station... Sorry, what line Cannon Street Station is...
The Circle Cannon, Line, of course.
Pardon? Circle Line?
Got there.
And the District Line.
Yeah, the question eventually was, what line is Cannon Street Station on? I wrote down in...
Yes, it was obvious.
So, that's for Kirby. Yes. Mary.
Yes.
What did John Levine play in The Web of Fear?
Oh, yes.
He played a Yeti.
Andy.
Yep.
How did Lethbridge Stewart get in?
In through the window.
Oh, very good. Very good.
Did he get it at Hoban?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Hoban Ammunition Party, so I'll give you that. You use the word Hoban, so I'm not going to be too Kirby-ish on that one. Right, score update. In I the last place...
Oh, that's with it for the Ammunition Party. He didn't need... You should not have given him
that. Shut up. Last place with 5 points is me.
Drive.
In fourth place with 6 points is Andy. In joint second place with 8 points each is Debbie and Mary. And then the lead with 13 points, it's Kirby. The next question goes to Debbie.
Yeah.
What station do Jamie and Evans first visit?
St. Paul's Central Line.
Oh, I know.
Ooh, Central Line. You were paying
St. Paul's attention. Was enough. There.
I was paying attention, yeah.
Kirby.
Master?
What is the staff sergeant's name?
I know.
Arnold.
You answer like...
Everyone knows that.
So, like Mary.
It's like, what?
Mary.
Yeah.
What does Evan say when Jamie accuses him of wanting to save his own skin?
I don't remember.
Excellent. I'll finally get a point.
I know.
Go on in, Kirby.
That's an obvious one. He's only got the one skin.
Andy.
Yep.
What job does Lethbridge Stewart give to Chorley?
Liaison officer.
Ding, 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 ding.
Kirby.
Yes?
How long will it take for the bomb to explode?
Which bomb?
The bomb, oh, God's sake, the 60 bomb.
60 seconds to detonate the trolley.
Yeah, damn.
Yeah, who said which bomb? They're going to get point deducted. Who said which bomb?
Kirby.
Right, point deducted.
You dobber.
Yep, why not?
There were two bombs.
Point deducted. Right, and Kirby. I didn't really deduct a point. Stop sulking. let me get up to right. Which soldier dies at the end of episode 3?
I know.
Gosh, I'm with the soldiers again. See, it's not this one, it's not that one.
I think I might know.
Yeah, I think I know as well. Yeah.
Okay, then you know it.
I don't, probably.
Go on in, Debbie.
I think it's Williams, isn't it?
Williams? No, that's definitely...
Well, I actually thought I got his first name. I think it's Weems.
Weems. You don't get any points because she said Williams. Right.
I thought I got him first, but never mind. I won't bother.
Well, no, she butted in, I'm afraid, so she took the... I do apologise, but it's Debbie. Shall I deduct a point off her?
No, of course not. Let me say later.
No.
See, outvoted there.
Sorry.
Whose question was that originally? Kirby's?
That was mine.
Yeah, Mary?
Yes.
What was the first station that Lethbridge Stewart planned to pass through on his way to Covent Garden?
Oh, I know.
I think I know. Yeah.
Queensway?
I think I know.
Go on, Debbie.
Tottenham Court Road. Tottenham Court Road, down to Leicester Square and on to Covent Garden.
Don't be a smart ass. Right then, Andy.
Yeah.
What does the doctor say when Anne persuades the captain to allow them to go to the surface?
Will only be for like 15 minutes or something like that.
Anybody?
I think I know.
Go on, Em.
Well done, Travers.
Right, score update. In the last place, or joint last place to be precise, Mary and Andy with 8 points. In third place with 10 points, me. In second place with 13 points, Debbie. And in the lead with 17 points, it's Kirby. Right, this question goes to Debbie.
Yep.
What music could be heard as the Yeti walked the streets?
We all know this one. I know the name of it.
Never mind the name of it.
I'm about to say I don't actually know because I wasn't paying much attention at that time.
That's really surprising, but go on then, Kirby.
Space Adventure Part 3. It's nothing with the Cybermen.
Yeah, can you say it without sounding like Cher, though?
Space Adventure Part 3. It was used mostly with Cybermen.
I can feel something inside me.
Yeah.
What, is there an issue?
Yeah, you were breaking up.
Yeah,
one stream.
It's funny because I thought of you today when that song came on I Love White Radio as we were driving back from Robin Hill.
Believe in that.
Yes, you got the point. Mary.
Thank you.
Yes.
What name was on the trolley that
Colonel... I knew you were going to ask this.
Yeah, I knew he was going to ask
this. What name was on the trolley that Colonel's group hid behind during the battle?
E.J. Forrester and Sons.
Yay.
Yeah, I've got that written down.
It marks the names on vans and wagons.
Andy.
Right.
Yep.
What Doctor Who regular extra appeared in the Colonel's group of soldiers? I'll say that again. What Doctor Who regular extra appeared in the Colonel's group of soldiers? I'm just poising it over the irrelevant button.
Yeah, you're gonna, it's going to be a... sort of thing.
It's going to do a what?
Yeah, well, it is. Oh, flippity. It's not Bell, is it? Corporal Bell?
No, that's not an actor's name that I know.
Oh,
no,
it's an actor. It's an actor, and I remembered this one, I may answer, because I got so yelled at least three times by Matthew, back in the Matthew days, for not knowing the guy. Terry Walsh.
Eventually, all you had to say, Kirby, was Terry Walsh. You'd never go on
an interesting anecdote,
spinning some sort of a yarn and anecdote.
What's wrong with an anecdote?
Life after love, I believe. I don't know the words. So that was Andy's question, wasn't it? So, yep. Debbie.
Yes.
Who wrote The Web of Fear?
I had to turn back pages. Mervyn Hazeman.
A little educated clearing of throat.
Didn't get that because Mary talked over.
Yeah, I didn't hear it. I think you got it.
Well, you knew I'd have it written down, so I went, Mervyn Hazeman and Henry Lincoln.
Oop, I missed my bell.
Sounds nasty.
Kirby.
Master.
What word did the possessed Travers first say?
Silence!
It worked with the share, boy.
Yes. Mary.
Yes.
What does the Colonel tell the Doctor to stay behind and continue with when he, Evans and Jamie go in search of Victoria?
I know.
Oh, yes.
To continue work on his little voice box.
No.
Go on in, Mary.
Tinkering.
Ooh, I missed the bell again.
Continue with your tinkering.
Andy, yes. How long to the Doctor and Anne?
Whose question?
Andy. I said Andy quite blimmin' clearly.
I didn't hear you.
Oh, shut up. Right. How long do the Doctor and Anne have to get the sphere to obey verbal commands?
20 minutes.
I couldn't hear that because I said I know over it.
You got it right.
20 minutes.
Oh, good. I'm glad it's wrong.
What?
Anybody else?
Oh, yes. Well, it's 12 minutes.
They did it in 12.
Thank you, Kirby?
Yeah, it was the first start part really was 20 minutes point, and then 12 minutes.
Because Debbie, I should really deduct a point. That's 2 points that Debbie should have deducted after jumping in with answers that were wrong.
I said I know. I'm sorry.
And then when he said the wrong answer.
I thought it was the right answer.
But that's
why am I being punished for stuff everybody does all the time?
Because I'm quite enjoying it. Right, who's next? I've lost. Is that Andy's question?
Yeah, it's mine.
Better. I'll score update then, shouldn't we? In last place with 9 points, it's Andy. In fourth place with 10 points, it's Mary. In third place with 14 points, it's me. In second place with 15 points, it's Debbie. And then the lead with 22 points, it's Kirby. Next question goes
to
Debbie.
Yes.
What station do Victoria and Travers, Victoria and Travers...
Piccadilly.
She said that very petulantly, did you notice that?
It's Kirby. The way you sighed because you knew I'd know.
Kirby, how long did the Doctor order... What?
Right?
What did you say?
Whose question
it's
is this?
It's yours!
Okay.
Right. I've lost where I was now.
You just had the station of Victorian
Travers. Yeah, I was just about to read the wrong question out, so you probably did quite a good job there. right, this is yours. Who plays Anne Travers?
Tina Packer?
Mary.
Yes.
Where was Victoria safe?
I don't know.
Ooh. Surprise. I actually get a point. Anybody? It was all gone quiet, so that's another. That's a point to me. The answer was Piccadilly Circus. Andy.
Yep.
Who? Oh, I've done that one. No, sorry, it's Piccadilly Station was the answer. Sorry, Piccadilly Circus was the answer to the previous one. Andy, how long did the Doctor...
There's a difference?
Shut up. How long... Yes, it
no,
is.
There isn't.
How long did the Doctor order the Yeti to switch off for?
90 seconds.
Yay.
Not many questions left. Therefore, score update in last place with 10 points. It's Mary in fourth place with 11 points. It's Andy in third place with... 16 points is me in second place with 17 points. It's Debbie in the lead with 24 points. It's Kirby. This question goes to Debbie.
Yes.
What tune does the Doctor play on his recorder?
I know.
I only know it as I've seen.
That'll do.
I know.
I only know it as.
Yes, of course you know it.
Kirby.
Master?
Who wrote the
stuff? I didn't know if it had another
Shut
name,
up.
Sorry.
It's the Sky Boat Song.
Be quiet.
There you go. Thank
Be
you.
Be quiet. Kirby.
He's forgot the point.
Master?
Any more talking? Well, I'm trying to ask Kirby this question. There'll be points deducted. Who were the stars of the film Blockbusters according to the platform poster?
Seeing that I just posted the picture
no,
of
I'll
it.
No, get on with it.
Cindy Poitier and Matt Steyer.
I was going to say you just posted that.
Right, Mary.
Yes.
Who is touching according to the intelligence? Sorry, I'll start again. What is touching according to the intelligence?
What is touching?
Yeah, what does the intelligence think is touching?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
Ooh, finally, I get a point. Anybody?
Is it something to do with human compassion or something? I'm not sure, for sure.
No, I wonder the word that they used was solicitude.
Yeah.
Andy?
Yeah.
Common word used by everybody.
Be quiet. Yes. Andy, what insult does the... Shut up. What insult does the...
Alan T. Butcher would use it.
I'm getting very close to deducting points at this point. Make sense? Points at this point? Right. It was just close. Andy, wasn't it? Andy,
yeah.
What insult does the Doctor aim at Evans? Slightly racist insult, actually.
Are you calling Taffy?
No, he doesn't. It's been rather good for me, so it means I'll get a point. Anybody else? No, right, the answer is Blithering Welsh Imbecile.
Oh, yeah!
Oh, yeah.
Right, now, one last question, it's a free-for-all. I'll give you a score update to see if it makes a difference. It probably won't. Right, in last place, with 10 points, it's Mary. In fourth place, with 11 points, it's Andy. In third place, with... 19 points, it's Debbie. In second place with 20 points, it's me. And in the lead with 26 points, it's Kirby. Right, this
Yay.
Is the free... not free-for-all question, but it's the last question. Everybody can answer. Please don't mess around. What was Derek Sherwin's job on The Web of Fear?
I know.
Go on then, Kirby.
A script editor.
Oh, dear.
What? That's what it says on Wikipedia, so...
Well, you need to look at the titles, but that's incorrect, not according to the titles.
Wikipedia? What are you doing on Wikipedia?
Right, so that's the point...
I use it for notes.
Debbie, did you say I know?
No, I thought it was the same thing.
Okay. So I get another point.
What was his...
Story editor.
Bloody hell.
What difference does that make? I'm getting okay. It's time to bring up a credit sequence here and see.
He's probably right, Kirby.
We'll see.
Listen to him. Right then. While he's faffing around doing that, I shall now touch up the scores. And then it's just talk amongst yourselves a bit.
Amongst ourselves.
Okay, right then. That's not. I'm not quite there yet, actually. Okay, that is.
Carry the three.
Is, Okay, right then.
Ow!
Right then, so the final scores, therefore.
I flicked myself.
In last place with 10 points, Mary. Because obviously that she predicted.
Yeah, but it's a very credible 10 points.
Yes.
Oh, I love your support, Deb.
In fourth place with 19 points, it's Debbie.
Ooh.
What?
In third place with 22 points, it's Andy.
Ooh.
In second place with 44 points, it's me. And then the winner this week with 52 points, because he had faith in his own abilities, it's Kirby.
No, he didn't.
I did not have faith in my own. I would have said Debbie.
Yeah. Well done, Kirby.
I don't know what we should do ourselves.
I don't quite see it, so I don't quite get it. Where did it?
So just to recap on that one. Hang on, I'm recapping. Debbie predicted Debbie, so no double points there. Kirby predicted Kirby, doubled his points from 26. He was in the lead anyway.
I only did it because Debbie said to.
Oh, was it? Debbie.
I did not play.
What a terrible tactic that was.
If that's any help, I really was playing.
Mary predicted me.
With picking yourself.
Andy predicted Kirby and therefore doubled his points from 11 to 22. And I predicted Kirby, doubling my points 22 to 44. But it just wasn't enough because Kirby had faith in his own abilities. There's the moral. The moral from this episode of the 20 Megabyte Podcast, have faith in your own abilities.
Vote for yourself.
Master.
For yourself,
Master,
yeah.
I can... Let me make a point about next week. Since next week is entirely missing, so I have no... info text or anything, and it's one that I've never seen. Do not, I repeat, do not try to say that I will win. I will probably lose badly.
Excuses.
Yeah, but I don't use info text.
There's Fury from the Deep next week, everybody.
I know, you write practically the entire script on in little tiny words.
It's one that I've only little heard once words. Via the audio. Thanks to Audible.
Oh, the bar.
So I remember very little of it. I just remember a few snippet scenes that exist that have been saved from the censors down under, I think. But other than that, I have seen very little. I think I've seen a little snippet scene of the Sonic Screwdriver, maybe. I can't remember. Sorry, was somebody going to say something?
Well, I
have the credit up as story editor. I was wrong.
Well, you would be, wouldn't you? Because I wrote it down while reading the title sequence, Kirby. I should deduct a point, but if I did, it would make a blooming difference. So.
And I have to say that I have to leave in like 1 minute because I have to be somewhere.
Mary! Anyways, get on. Right, Doctor News. Okay, right, should be quite a lot of news, actually, considering that we haven't been around for a while. Muhammad Ali passed away. That's very sad news. Nothing to do with Doctor Who, but...
I was going to say, was he in Who?
he might have had something to do with Doctor Who. Who knows?
I suspect he's probably been mentioned a few times within it somewhere along the line. Did we mention Bert Kwok passing away?
Yes.
Did we last time?
Can't
remember that.
Pretty sure we did.
Maybe we did. I don't remember, though. But if we didn't, Bert Kwok, obviously he was in a story... Actually, he was in the first story that Peter Davison filmed, which was... which I forget.
Oh, that's right. He was.
And what was it called again? Ford to Doomsday?
Ford to Doomsday.
Yes, he was in that. Of course, he's better known for his performance in Tenko, which is a fantastic show from many, many yonks ago.
He was also
in Kato. Wasn't he Kato in the Pink Panther?
Kato!
A very sad loss. But 85 years old, so they seem to be buying in their 80s at the moment. Doctor Who experience over the bank holiday weekend. We won't talk about that because that's long gone. And
when was the bank holiday weekend?
Last week. Doctor Who magazine issue 500. The cover has been released for the 500th issue of Doctor Who magazine. Good idea. They stuck Peter Capaldi on the cover. Very apt, as he is the Doctor. Candy Jar Book, Sarah Jane Smith competition. Candy Jar Books have launched a competition to tie in with the release of their latest Lethbridge Stewart novels, Moonblink. Something to do with Sarah Jane Smith, blah, blah, blah. What else we got here? Moments in Time, he's back, and it's about time. Something to do with Paul McGann. Is that Paul McGann? It's sort of 20 years since he became the Doctor? No, it's not. Is it?
Yes, it is.
Is it really?
It was last weekend. Yes, he mentioned it during the convention.
He was a doctor just before my daughter was born. Sixth Doctor returns to the airways. Colin Baker becomes the current doctor again on British Airways today. That's the 28th of May on BBC Radio 4 Extra. Apparently there was a Doctor Who thing on BBC 4.
Yes, apparently there was, but I didn't catch it.
I was given a tip-off about it, but I never got round to listening to it.
Well, you can go on to iPlayer Radio and listen to it again.
Yes, if you live in the UK. There's no more stuff about Doctor Who Magazine's 500th edition. Whotopia.
I can't wait until I can get that one.
Well, if you order it from whoone.co.uk.
Is that whoone.co.uk?
Quickly. Ronnie Langford has won Best Newcomer Award.
Yeah, she was talking about that this morning.
Oh, was she a name dropper?
Yeah, she was talking about the fact she's got it for EastEnders, and she was saying how it was such an honour to have won it because it's usually reserved for young newcomers to things. Yeah. So,
I like her on EastEnders.
Yeah, she's demonstrating that she can act.
How do you watch EastEnders?
How do I watch it?
Sort of sat in a chair with a glass of wine.
I don't necessarily watch it, to be fair, but
I mean, what do you watch it on?
Through a site we're not supposed to talk about.
Oh, okay.
Yes, our lips are sealed.
Anyway, as it doesn't have any Doctor Who on it whatsoever. Yeah, that site. I know what you're talking about.
Yes.
But yeah, she. I don't watch EastEnders, but the clips they showed on the Soap Awards show that she's actually a very versatile actress.
Yeah, the episodes are loaded the same day that they play, so... Oh,
that's good, then.
Nice to keep up.
Legally?
Kirby?
Sure! Well, I have an Apple TV thing, and I watch it through that.
Now, I got into trouble with She Who Must Be Obeyed for posting or sharing a picture of Peter Davison doing a one-figure salute after he got an award for The Cage of Androzani being voted the best Doctor Who story of all time.
Yeah, that was kind of a weird picture.
But it was a weird picture, but I thought I'd post it because I thought it was quite light-hearted and funny. But I got moaned at about it.
It was.
In fact, I got moaned at initially by Deb and then by Isabella, who thought it was rude, even though I'm sure she goes around the playground at school doing the same gestures to her friends anyway. Right, classic series costumes up for sale. Number of costumes and props from the classic series of Doctor Who are up for auction at the in the Bamford's Film and Memorabilia sale taking place in Derby on the 8th of June. What date is it today? Oh, we've still got a bit of time to go up to that one. That's quite naff looking things got on the pictures on the DoctorWhoNews.net. That's about it, really. Don't want to talk about the new comic, 11th Doctor 2.10. We're going to talk about whowon.co.uk.
Could you hear the cat there?
No, I couldn't hear the cat, no.
Yeah, and I do have to go. So
Mary.
Sorry, I got to go.
I've got to go soon as well.
When are we going to record next?
In the future.
Oh, great.
How many episodes is Fury?
That's probably six.
It's four.
Maybe next week then.
No, it's six.
Make your mind up.
Well, either way, it's next Sunday.
Possibly.
It's six episodes. I'm looking at the Wikipedia page.
So when are we going to find out when
it is? Should we try for next Sunday then? Can we try and do six episodes in a week, please?
I can.
Okay. Everybody all right with that?
Yeah.
I suppose.
Bye-bye, all. Bye, Mary. Right, whowon.co.uk has the 12th Doctor New Sonic Screwdriver for sale at £14.99. Debbie hasn't got me one.
And Alan T. Butcher just posted a video of that screwdriver.
I saw that. It was brilliant, wasn't it?
Yes, I thought I'd seen that video somewhere along there. 12th Doctor New Sonic Screwdriver, £14.99.
Does it look good? I want that.
Cool Box Salt and Pepper Shakers. I've actually got square TARDIS ones I bought in Newport.
Bought me some, didn't you?
Yes, mine are chips.
I still owe you a birthday present, so you're going to have to choose something, because I looked all round the con for
asked me what I want for Father's Day. I don't know.
Peaceful day?
That's what happened.
Now, I know that Mother's Day, the British Mother's Day is different from the American Mother's Day. What about Father's Day?
Yeah, it's called Mothering Sunday for
mothers
stars.
Are different from American mothers.
Yeah, it's called Mothering Sunday. Yeah.
Right, but is Father's Day the same day as ours is?
No, I don't know when Father's Day is.
It's 19th of June.
It's 19th.
Same day?
Yeah, it's the day after my second operation.
Okay. Anyway, moving on. Yes, the coaster set, $9.99. It's quite pretty, actually. It's very sort of Andy Warhol-ish. A Dalek, a Cyberman, TARDIS. Can't see what's underneath that one, but they're quite cute. Dalek mug, price £5.99. I see DWM 500, $9.99, because it's a bumper edition. But you can buy it through whoone.co.uk. Excuse me.
It's at whoone.co.uk.
Milk jug. TARDIS milk jug, which they've decided that they're not going to bother making the square ones like I've got, making round TARDIS merchandise now, a bit weird. You can get a Doctor Who pencil case, ideal for now, isn't it, as we're coming to the end of the school year. And that's about it for Doctor Who stuff at whoone.co.uk. I haven't looked at Lavarzi for ages, but I'm sure they've got some new stuff.
I love Lavarzi.
Yeah, so does Debbie. She's going to be working for them next year. Live Long and Prosper, official merchandise for Star Trek fans. Apparently, I've got to have a look at that. So I know it's not Doctor Who related, but we are being sponsored by this company. So I think we're duty bound to mention things that aren't necessarily Doctor Who related. They've got.
Now, last weekend, as I was wearing my scarf around the convention, people were still complimenting me about it because it's the most authentic looking one.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, they have in the Star Trek range, Live Long and Prosper sky blue umbrellas with the sort of Live Long and Prosper, you know, thingy. Also, Live Long and Prosper.
Adam, sorry to interrupt. I'm going to have to go. Isla is really not very well today.
Yeah, and I'm going to go as well.
I'm so sorry. No, Isla is really not doing very well right now. I'm going to go and be mummy because I've been away all weekend.
Bye, Debbie.
Sorry.
Bye. And I'm off as well. Bye, Andy. Okay, folks. See you, folks. Have a good weekend. See you next week.
Just me and you then, Kirby.
Yes, yes.
Are you going anywhere?
I can smell dinner downstairs.
I thought
he was going to
say you can smell sick for a minute there. Live Long and Prosper Spock scarf, knitted thing, official Star Trek scarf, very nice. And another Trek umbrella with the blue, yellow and red panels with the Star Trek logo on it. That's really cool, actually. And the Ships of Line scarf. Can't see that in great detail. Oh, yeah, it's got the Star Trek spaceships on it.
Starships.
Scarf. Starships, indeed, yes.
That's spaceships.
All right, starships, God's sake. Doctor Who, the usual stuff with the TARDIS scarf, the Dalek scarf, fourth Doctor scarf and tie. The fifth Doctor jumper is available in the sale, apparently, as is my favourite, the seventh Doctor pullover. Still can't get the umbrella from Lavarzi. I have one of those. You can get the sort of what looks like a Xenon Gallifrey with the TARDIS there. It's not necessarily Gallifrey. Umbrella, the Paisley scarves, hankies.
I'll find the site and I'll identify what it is.
So yes, go to lavarzi.co.uk where you can get all this stuff.
And is that lavarzi.co.uk?
This is. And of course,
stop farting.
audible.com/20MB. 20 MB, in other words, where you can get a free audiobook if you take up a 1 month free subscription. And if you decide to continue that subscription and pay for it, you get one book each month within that subscription. You can also have the access to a massive range of audiobooks, so it's a really good thing. It also helps the podcast out, so yes, that's it for this week. Next week, I'm quite excited actually to get a chance to view Fury from the Deep, because
if you can call it viewing, since there's none of it except for those short censored clips.
Yeah, but is there no reconstruction?
Yeah, there's reconstruction.
Well, shut up then. That's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to seeing the reconstruction.
I'm being picky.
Yes, you are. So, yes.
Pedantic.
Thank you. So, until you're talking about me doing in this chair and farting, what I'm doing is creaking it, but I'm going to do a real one just for the sake of it. There we go. So until next week, thank you for listening to the show. Thank you for bearing with us after not being on a lot over this last month or so. Hopefully that will change over the next few weeks. Thank you for listening to the show. Goodbye.
Goodbye, fancy pants.
Services.co.uk production and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast is sponsored by whoone.co.uk, lavazi.co.uk and audible.com. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.